So first, thank you very much for having me here. This is my first time at Perimeter, and since I grew up in Canada, I'm very proud that this place is here. Like, my heart is full. So, second, this talk will be, I'm a philosopher by training, so this talk is going to be much more philosophical than anything we've had since maybe John's talk. Which I hope will be a refreshing change, but most of what I say will be said in a quite generic terminology. And it's aimed actually at not just a common view, but what is pretty much the received view in the philosophical community, which is that probabilities, or at least objective probabilities of the sort that quantum mechanics gives us, are wholly new, something kind of metaphysically novel, introduced by quantum mechanics, and like nothing we had never seen before in physics. So there's a kind of massive literature in philosophy devoted to trying to understand the metaphysical nature of chances. And what I'm going to be arguing is that, in fact, this is a mistaken view, that there's nothing really metaphysically that novel about objective probabilities at all. And the thesis really has two parts. The first part is that what we're always applying in practice, even in a deterministic context, when we're dealing with expectations either for the universe as a whole, in the absence of kind of precise, complete knowledge of the physical state of the universe as a whole, or when we're deriving expectations for open subsystems of the universe, what we're really dealing with in both those cases, what we're really applying and deriving expectations, are really migration, what I'm going to call migration patterns over phase space, which is to say regularities that map finite volumes of phase space, or distribution, some sort of initial distribution over a finite volume of phase space onto a distribution at some later time. And that these kinds of regularities, these sort of migration patterns over phase space, aren't derivable from deterministic laws alone, but in a deterministic context, we can derive them from a probabilistic assumption that's usually embodied in the interpretation of the phase space metric, an interpretation that is not that unfamiliar to physicists, but that mostly remains tacit. And so in a classical or in a deterministic context, we never really need to mention probabilities in presentation of the theory, even though I want to suggest that the probabilistic assumption is there and it's necessary in the derivation of expectations. Okay. Then I'm going to propose a definition of chance, or by chance I just mean the objective single case probabilities of the sort provided by Born's rule. That connects them to these sorts of migration patterns over phase space. So that's the motivation. And it really, I mean, it really is. This comes from two longish papers. And I've not very successfully boiled it down to a half-hour sketch. So for what it's worth, I'll talk fast and try to get the general idea across, say what I can, and hope that you'll fill in some of the details and forgive me for the sketchiness. And I hope that some of the motivation, at least, will be lost to physicists who haven't been sort of acculturated into this belief or the sort of received view in the philosophical community that really chance, you know, objective probabilities is something wholly new and really cries out for metaphysical explanation. Okay. So first, some preliminaries. And this is really just by way of fixing ideas. I'll be using, again, generic terminology, because most of what I say will be quite general. Phase space is just a central representational phase in physics. It's the space within which all of the states pertaining to a system are represented. And it encodes, in general, all of the really important information that we have about those states. Physically possible histories are represented by trajectories through phase space. By determinism, I just mean when we have a universe governed by deterministic laws, there's one physically possible trajectory through each point in the universal phase space, that is, the phase space for the universe. And this entails that, as Laplace famously pointed out, every single discussion of determinism in philosophy starts with this quote, given for one instant an intelligence which could comprehend all the forces by which nature is animated, and the respective situation of the beings who compose it, an intelligence sufficiently vast to submit these data to analysis, it would embrace in the same formula the movements of the greatest bodies of the universe and those of the lightest atom. For it, nothing would be uncertain, and the future and the past would be present to its eyes. Okay. Now, this has been held by many to entail that determinism is incompatible with chance, and by chance, again, I just mean objective single-case probabilities of the sort delivered by Born's rule. Karl Popper and David Lewis thought so. And Barry Lower here is, argument is seldom given, but Barry Lower here is voicing recently, in a recent paper, the reasoning when he writes, in case one is looking for an argument that objective probabilities are incompatible with deterministic laws, here is one. If the laws are deterministic, then the initial conditions of the universe entail all the facts, at least all the facts expressible in the vocabulary of the theory. But if that is so, there is no further fact, or at least no further objective fact, for a probability statement to be about. Okay. Now, Laplace was, of course, correct about an intelligence that knew the state of the universe as a whole. But of course, we, or at least I, am not such an intelligence. We don't know the state of the universe with perfect precision. And when we need to represent the state of the universe, we usually represent it not with a point, but with a finite volume of phase space. Of course, we're not always interested in the universe as a whole. So we're not always dealing with the universal phase space. Often, we're interested in open subsystem, whose intrinsic state is more closely ascertainable. But even when we're dealing with a subsystem whose intrinsic state we know with arbitrary precision, we're still dealing implicitly with finite volumes of the universal phase space. And that is, after all, the phase space over which the deterministic laws are defined. For the state of an open subsystem of the universe is really a partial specification of the state of the universe as a whole, and corresponds to that finite volume in the universal phase space that's extended in all dimensions not internal to the system. Okay. So again, we don't know the state of the universe with perfect precision, so we represent it not with a point, but with a finite volume of the universal phase space. And there are multiple physically possible trajectories, indeed, typically an infinite number, coming out of any finite volume of phase space. Okay. Dynamical laws that constrain only possibility, that is, dynamical laws that don't tell us only what is physically possible and what is physically impossible. Even deterministic laws that yield a single trajectory for every point in the phase space are going to be impotent to discriminate between possibilities. Okay, so what I've said is that there's a large number, typically an infinite number, of physically possible trajectories coming out of any finite volume in phase space, and deterministic laws that tell us, which trajectories are physically possible is not going to be able to discriminate among those possibilities. Okay. And the situation doesn't get much better if we restrict our attention to some manageable portion of the universe, an open subsystem. Even, again, when we're interested in open subsystem whose state we know with arbitrary precision, we are still dealing implicitly with finite volumes of the universal phase space, for the state of a subsystem, as I said, is really a partial specification of the state of the universe as a whole. And even the smallest volume in phase space associated with an open subsystem corresponds to the quite large volume of universal phase space. Okay. So in practice, though, to derive expectation for an open system S, what do we do? Well, schematically, we do something like this. We write down everything we know about S. That will carve out only a volume of the phase space. If we know nothing else about S, so we're completely ignorant, as it were, about where within that volume its state falls, we get our expectations from S by evolving forward a flat distribution over that volume. Okay. Or if we have some additional information about S, that information will be reflected in our initial distribution over the volume of phase space in which we've isolated its state. So we get to ignore the possibility that, for example, a comet will come at light speed and destroy our apparatus, that the air in the room in which we're carrying out our measurements or the experiment will anti-thermodynamically collect in one corner of the room, or that the pointer on our measuring device will be disturbed by a quantum tunneling event, even though we may recognize those in our official version of the theory as physical possibilities, because we think they have a negligible or low probability. That is to say, we discriminate among the possibilities. Even when we're whenever we're deriving expectations, we ignore some of them, and we pay attention to others. As possibilities, however, they're on a par with the possibilities that we take seriously. For example, the possibility that the result we observe tells us something significant about the system that we're measuring. The epistemic symmetry among physical possibilities, I'm suggesting, is broken only by their relative probability. So the real predictive power of the theory comes not from the laws alone, which again just tell us what the physical possibilities are, right? But from the laws together with an initial distribution. The derivation for any system, the derivation of expectation for any system, involves the invocation, tacit or explicit, of a probability distribution, the determinism of the universal laws notwithstanding, so long as there's any ignorance, no matter how small or distant, of the state of the universe as a whole, and there always is ignorance of that sort. So no probability in, no probability out. Without a probability distribution, deterministic laws will not tell us how to divide opinion between possibilities when we don't have specific information that singles out a unique trajectory. Okay. And the fact is that if we don't know the state of the universe as a whole, or at least part of the universe that falls within the back light cone of the system under study, we never have enough information to single out a unique trajectory. So just, again, to repeat in practice, some version of this practice, most of which is implicit in the kind of day-to-day life of the physicist, but you know, making explicit the steps in it, the practice goes something like this. Again, we assume a flat distribution over the volume of the phase space, compatible with what we know about the system. And when we do that, we're effectively randomizing over unknown variables. And this practice expresses a tacit assumption that equal volumes of phase space represent equally probable states, in the sense that if you have two states of equal volume, A and B, a random pick from the population is equally likely to yield a system in a state represented by A and a state represented by B. Okay. Even if ultimately we want to hold that theory should be treated as especially authoritative guides to opinion, to the extent that we think that the theory actually delivers expectation, okay, that is, that the expectations we derive by applying a flat distribution, evolving forward evolving forward in accordance with the laws and taking our expectations for the system from that, to the extent that we think that's a deliverance of a theory, not something that the experimenter gets to apply at his own discretion, okay, then we should recognize that such an assumption is part of the objective content of the theory, an assumption about the significance of the probabilistic significance of the phase-based metric. Okay. To use a flat distribution to represent ignorance, or an uneven one, for that matter, to represent departures from ignorance or information about the system, is to tacitly make the assumption that a random pick from systems whose states fall within that subspace is equally likely to fall within equal volumes of it. And again, you can't use departures from a flat distribution to represent knowledge or to represent information without having this sort of understanding of the significance of a flat distribution. Upshot, this gives the metrical structure of phase space an empirical significance that's not commonly recognized in the philosophical literature, but of course it's not at all alien to physicists. It's just a generalization of the lesson that we all learned the hard way from the example of statistical mechanics. So what statistical mechanics, or what the example of statistical mechanics taught us, is that there are substantial assumptions built about the relative probabilities of states built into the role that the metrical structure of phase space plays in the formation of expectation. That these assumptions are independent of the dynamical laws, because again, that's something we learned from the example of statistical mechanics. We can hold fixed the laws and inflate some volumes of phase space and deflate others and derive quite different expectations about the relative probabilities of states represented by those volumes of phase space. We can get radically different expectations for behavior, again, holding fixed the dynamical laws by changing the metrical structure. So, interim conclusion. What all of this suggests is that we should recognize a type of probability that's more basic than chance, that's not intrinsically dynamical, and that's practically indispensable component of deterministic and indeterministic theories alike. The probability in question expresses relative probabilities of states represented by any two volumes of phase space, and can be used to define the conditional probability of one state on another, or combined with the laws to generate transition probabilities between any two states. So that's the first part. Switching gears now to see how we might use this to help us understand quantum probability. And staying here within the context of standard non-relativistic quantum mechanics, and again, just to sort of fix ideas, the wave function represents a state of a physical system at a time. Schrodinger's equation is a deterministic unitary equation that says how the state of a system evolves if it is undisturbed. Born's rule is supposed to tell us how to calculate the chance of E on S, given S's state at any given time, where E is the result of an encounter with a measuring apparatus. So what this tells us is that chances are numbers that are generated by Born's rule. We haven't said anything about what those numbers represent. There are some other things that we know about chance that serve as constraints on an interpretation of those numbers. And these are things that we might say follow, as it were, from the concept of chance, in the sense that anyone that denied them, right, might not be held to really understand what chances are. So the philosophers will recognize these, you know, as pretty much accepted conceptual constraints on the interpretation of chance. One is quantitative constraints. The chance of an event after it occurs is always either 0 or 1. So if you're talking to someone, for example, and they purport to think that an event that happened yesterday now has a chance of something other than 0 or 1 of happening, you'd say, well, they're just a bit confused about what chances are. Mm-hmm. The principle. This says that chance guides credence, or guides subjective probabilities, in the absence of crystal balls. Or equivalently, chance trumps all and only historical information. So this is kind of the central interpretive constraint on chance in the philosophical literature. And there is really just a vast literature trying to understand what the metaphysical nature of a thing that obeys this kind of, that bears this sort of internal constraint to credence could be. And finally, Bernoulli's law, which just follows from the fact that chance is a form of probability. If S is in a state psi, there's a necessary but approximate and probabilistic relation between the chance of E on S and the relative frequency of E among systems in psi. Okay. So these constraints, these three here, all of them putatively derived from the concept of chance, present a kind of interpretive dilemma that make them hard to satisfy jointly. And this is the heart of the philosophical problem about understanding what chance is. For those of you who aren't sort of soaked in the philosophical literature, it really focuses mostly on the second constraint, the principle, for sort of accidental historical reasons. And the worrying takes the form that there's no way of satisfying these constraints without rejecting what is the kind of probably the reigning research program in metaphysics. Okay. So the dilemma, the interpretive dilemma that these three principles, these three constraints on the interpretation of chance present are, and this is putting it in my terms, but I think this is really the heart of the difficulty. On the one hand, chances are too tightly connected to categorical facts, that is, you know, just facts about what the local matters of particular fact, local matters of particular non-modal and non-probabilistic fact are in the universe, to be conceived as distinct existences. And that follows from the first constraint. Okay. The second constraint, the principal principle, Bernoulli's law, seems to rule out reduction of chances to the natural candidates for reduction, namely frequencies, and suggests strongly from a physical perspective that we should treat chances as primitive quantities alongside other theoretical postulates. Okay. So on the one hand, chances are too tightly connected to the categorical facts to be conceived as distinct existences. On the other hand, they're too loosely connected to the fact, to the events that their chances of, to permit a reduction to frequencies, because again, the actual probabilities can diverge from the frequency. Sorry, the probabilities can diverge from the actual frequencies. Okay. And this gives them a strangely, this gives the chances a strangely ambiguous ontological status. The first constraint pushes us in the direction of reduction of chances to categorical facts. The second constraint seems to rule out reduction to the natural candidate and suggests strongly that from a physical perspective, we should treat chances, as I said, alongside the other primitive quantities, right, as a new sort of, or as a distinct existence, a new sort of primitive theoretical quantity. So here's the punchline of what I said in the first part of the talk. Instead of trying to reduce chances to categorical facts or to accept them as primitive existences, why don't we do this? We reject both primitivism. Right? So we don't think the chances are something that's wholly distinct from the other, from the events that they're chances of. And we reject reduction to categorical facts, facts about frequencies and so on. And we define chance as follows. The chance at a time t of an event e is the probability of e given pre-t history, where the chance of e at t is just the probability of e assessed at t, okay? Where the probability there is just a general statistical probability, derivable in a deterministic context from the laws together with the fundamental measure, history. So you use, in the classical context, you use the fundamental measure together with the laws to generate a probability distribution over histories. Right? And then in that context, you get the chance of E given pre-T history in the ordinary way by just conditionalizing on pre-T history. So the idea is, it's a kind of artifact of the determinism of the laws that you can get the chances at all times in a deterministic context by just evolving forward the fundamental, by just, you know, evolving forward the sort of distribution that's implicit in the, that you get from giving a flat distribution over the phase space. Right? And then you never need to explicitly mention probabilities so long as that probabilistic assumption remains tacit. Okay. In a quantum context, right, you now need to insert, because the laws aren't deterministic, you need to insert explicit mention of the probabilities in the laws to get the right distribution to get the right kind of statistical probabilities at later times. Right? But that's just a kind of accident. Probabilities are there in the classical context as well, and they're playing effectively the same role in governing expectations. So it should be clear just by looking at the definition that, first of all, satisfies the quantitative constraints. It follows from the definition almost trivially that the chance of any event assessed after its occurrence will always be 0, 1 because you're conditionalizing on the events or the negation of the event whose chance is being assessed. Should be obvious that it obeys the law of large numbers. This follows from the fact that the function is characterized by death as a probability function. Okay. It's also true, and this is something apropos of the topic of the conference, that so long as the probability is of E is not time dependent and chance is defined in terms of probability, death preserves the temporal symmetry of the fundamental theoretical postulate. Okay, so there's this worry again that it looks like the chances might be introduced, if chance is accepted as primitive, it might be introducing temporal asymmetry into the fundamental postulates if we treat it as primitive. Right? Because of the quantitative constraints on chance, the chance of events after it occurs is always 0 or 1. Right? But if you define chance in terms of a more fundamental measure, and the measure is just giving the statistical probabilities, then you don't have this problem of temporal asymmetry. It follows from a definition of chance. The asymmetry is introduced with the definition. Okay? The hardest part of arguing for the adequacy of the definition is satisfying the third constraint, the principle. Why should you adjust your credences to the chances in absence of any kind of crystal ball or information from the future? Showing us why we need to show why chance should play the role characterized by the principle, or some close relative of it. There's a bit of back and forth in philosophical literature about what the right formulation of the principle is. But either the principle itself or some close relative of it is taken for granted as a constraint on the role that chance plays in guiding belief. Okay? And the question here is, you know, is why should chance, defined in this way, play the role that it does guiding belief? After all, there are an indefinite number of probability functions that we might define. Consider, for instance, the pants of E, which is a probability of E, given the pre-2001 history of Australia. Or the France of E, which is a probability of E, given post-T history. Or the trance of E, which is a probability of E, given all of history. Okay. Why do none of these play the role in guiding? Why do we not adjust our credences to any of these, to the numbers given by any of these? Let me mention briefly some, answer should be obvious. Chance is the only function that trumps all and only historical information. For creatures like us, historical information is in principle available. Information from the future is ordinarily out of bounds. Right? So it just makes sense that we should adopt as our credences, given if we don't have any information from the future, if we don't have any crystal balls, just the chance of an event. That is, it's probability conditional on all of history. So chance guides belief because it is probability conditioned on all potentially available information. How am I doing for time? Okay, one more minute, then let me briefly mention some potential applications of the proposal. First, quick translation to relativistic setting. We identify systems, histories with world lines, define chances at points, and substitute contents of past light cone for history. And this gives us a new definition, the chance of E at P, where P is some point in space-time, is the probability of E conditioned on the contents of P's past light cone. Okay. Here's the first suggestion. Why don't we redefine determinism in the following way? I think it captures exactly the same thing that the traditional definition was really meant to capture. E is chancy, right, just in case it cannot be predicted with certainty from the preceding state of the universe, or the contents of the past light cone. That's the traditional definition. New definition, E is chancy just in case its occurrence cannot be predicted with certainty by application of dynamical laws to the contents of its past light cone. Implications of this redefinition. One, we preserve a chance. We preserve a connection between chance and predictability, which was the connection embodied in Laplace's the remark of Laplace that I quoted at the beginning. But we break the connection with determinism. Why is that? Well, that's because the connection between predictability and determinism is lost when we have a light cone structure that imposes greater restrictions on the availability of information than we have in a classical setting. And this has the further nice result of special interest for those interested in developing an Everettian view about quantum mechanics, that if we apply the definition in Everett universe, which restricts the back light cone of E to events that occur within E's branch of the wave function, we get chancy events, despite the determinism of the global dynamical law. Okay? So this would be a vindication of the view gaining support from some quarters in the philosophy of physics community, that there really is not such a big problem about finding something that plays the doxastic, cognitive, and confirmational role of chance in an Everettian universe. Should probably, there's another couple of smallish applications, but I should probably stop.
Let me suggest an example to you to see if whether I understand. Do you play poker by any chance?
No, I don't, no.
Okay, well then it's not going to make any sense. What I was going to, well, it may or may not. In poker, at any given time, there's a probability you're going to win a hand.
Of winning
a hand of poker. But the chance of winning the hand is not necessarily the probability of winning the hand. You may have a probability zero of winning a hand, but because of the concept of bluffing, you may in fact be able to win a hand. So your chance of winning a hand depends on a number of other things that have nothing to do with the absolute probabilities at a given time. And that chance is really an assessment, is an attempt that when you're talking about chance, you're disconnecting probabilities from the actual likelihood that you're able to win a hand at poker, and you can extend it to a game theoretic idea. That's sort of how I'm assessing what I think. That's what I understand you're saying, but not in that language.
Well, I guess I was just using the term chance in a, sort of as a terminological stipulation to mean objective single case probabilities. So in a context like that, you'd have to be, to derive the chance of a certain future event, say winning a hand, you'd have to conditionalize on all of the information in the back light cone of the event, of the moment at which you're, or the point in space-time at which the chance is being assessed. And relevant information there would be information, you know, that in any way conditions the probability of the event, including information, you know, about just as a bit of terminology, because I'm not sure I'm understanding. Credence is the term that I've used to refer to your subjective probability that a certain event will come about. By chance, I mean quite specifically something that's supposed to be independent of your subjective probabilities, in the sense that the chances are defined in a way that's independent of your subjective probability. So in the quantum context, chances are supposed to be the numbers that are delivered by Born's rule. And that's not descriptive of your epistemic state. It's not descriptive of facts about agents at all. And then the principle is supposed to come in and provide a conceptual connection between chance and credence. But the conceptual connection is this: you should adopt as your credences what you know about the chances. So if you know that the objective single case probability that you will win this hand is 0.8, no matter what you believe, or what you're inclined to believe or what you want to believe. You ought to adopt that and base your betting behavior on that as your subjective probability. So, you know, the constraint goes the other way. Chances are to be defined independently of facts about your epistemic state, but the connection between chance and credence goes by way of this principle, which tells you adopt the chances, unless you have a crystal ball that tells you exactly what, you know, whether or not you will win. Adopt the chance as your credence. And the suggestion, my proposal is, well, what is chance? Right? Well, it's the objective single case probability obtained from the ordinary statistical probability that you get from looking at, you know, the frequency, the probability of certain events conditioned on history.
I wanted to ask if all your talk has relevance to Bohmian or many world interpretation. I wanted to ask if what you gave in your talk is relevant to Bohmian or many world interpretation in which there is no chance.
Absolutely.
But then your last remark kind of confused me. It seems that changing the definition about relative to the past light cone, or either you believe that in physics everything else is irrelevant, then it doesn't make any difference. And if it's relevant, then why to make the definition?
I think that's probably why some of the motivation is lost on an audience of physicists. So let me just sort of acculturate you into, and I'm sorry about that, but let me acculturate you into what is the really received view in philosophical literature and probably in, you know, sort of in the world as a whole, that, well, we know what chance is in the sense that you were talking about in terms of subjective probabilities. And a lot of people think that, well, probability, that's just a description of people's epistemic states. But now we have this new physical theory, and the physical theory introduces the notion of chance as something that's supposed to be fundamental, part of the concrete structure, the material structure of the universe. A lot of hand-wringing in the philosophy community about, you know, in that special tone of voice that philosophers use when they're talking about metaphysics, but what is chance? What kind of thing could it be, right? And I'm thinking, it's nothing mysterious at all. You know, it's just probability, the ordinary statistical probability conditioned on history, and we use these sorts of probabilities in classical contexts as well as, you know, as well as quantum mechanics. They play effectively the same role. So there's no big mystery, at least not any new mystery, introduced by quantum mechanics, nothing that cries out for metaphysical interpretation. And all of the things that philosophers have kind of bent over backwards, wringing their hands about, to mix metaphors ridiculously, but about, you know, but how could something that's part of the material structure of the universe bear this sort of internal role to credence, and, you know, all of that, this is meant to say, you know, look, there's an almost trivial definition of chance in terms of an ordinary statistical probability that, you know, that delivers these sorts of interpretive constraints almost for free.
One of the deterministic interpretation, it's not really important.
No. I'm saying, no, sorry, that was meant to motivate sort of why one would bother defining chance. What goes on in the Bohmian context, I would say there is chance, there's always chance. But
there's no chance in Bohmian, everything is deterministic.
According to my definition, but the chances are always 0 or 1. And the same thing in the deterministic context. Chances are always 0 or 1. But they're sort of irrelevant in a lot of ways, and especially brought out in a Bohmian context, to the formation of belief, because we're never conditionalizing on all of past history. In a Bohmian context, there's an essential sort of ignorance that kind of keeps us from ever, you know, knowing what the chances are. If we're ignorant at all about what the initial, you know, positions of the particles are, we never know what the chances are in the Bohmian context.
So ignorance is chance? I think it's not.
I should probably, maybe we can talk later.